Welcome to E-commerce Scaling Secrets podcast. So on this podcast, we interview the best minds in online advertising and in e-commerce. And I share my personal experience spending over $40 million on paid advertising annually for our clients and their own business. So welcome to this podcast, guys.
Hello, guys. Alex Petito here. And I'm very excited for today's interview. Today we have you gotta fucking watch this interview and then listen to it again and then listen to it again, because the guy we have here today is a genius. This is Sam. Sam, what's your last name?
Olowell.
So Sam is e-commerce entrepreneur. He's doing multiple seven figures as of now, but what he does, he sells completely unique products. How you call it? Blue Ocean Market. Is that Blue Ocean?
Yeah, that's our plan. We want to make products that we can sell for years to come in a blue ocean. That's the plan, yeah. Ubiquitous, unique.
So this is not like dropshipping stuff. This is not like ripping, you know, the products that you see like on Alix. But this is developing like custom products from scratch that serve a specific market and that have the potential, because this is unique. You know, you advertise, people never seen it before. And now, Sam, what numbers you are doing? We started, you know, just recently helping Sam with Facebook advertising. What numbers you are doing now?
Yeah. So when I first started with you guys, I mean, Alix, I love everything that these guys are doing. So it's great. So when we first started, we were doing around 5 mil a year, but that was really us just playing around to refine our model. Now we're probably going to do around 30 plus million this year. Yeah, this is where we're at. And we only want to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
That's awesome. So what is kind of like, how do you find these ideas for these like unique products? How do you like, do you evaluate certain markets, or does it come from your own like frustrations with the specific products? How do you find these ideas for unique products?
It's funny, like lightning strikes in the strangest times, you know. So, you know, sometimes you can be in the shower and you have a great idea, but really we have a couple of girls who just do flat out research, nonstop 24/7 researching. And our goal is to, we have a very, very strict, like a very strict product criteria. And our goal is to find products in ubiquitous markets that are evergreen, okay? Evergreen niches, evergreen markets. And then we do the research. The research we do isn't rocket science. We have a very simple criteria to do research. And then once we think we find a niche that has a gap, okay, it goes over to our product design team. Everything we do is data driven. We don't make guesses. We don't do things because it feels good or it looks good. No, everything is data driven. Once we know what we're doing, it goes to the product design team. And then we go through what's called an ideation phase of between 2 to 3 months to really explore where we can add value to products in the market to make either them better or something completely unique so that we have a blue ocean.
Wow. And so do you typically go, what markets, you have some specific preferences for the markets? Like you go like health and wellness, you go like, what type of markets do you typically go in?
Yeah, that's a great question. The word is evergreen, right? We look for evergreen markets. So right now we have 4 brands. Two are already launched, like, you know, Alix, and 2 we're launching later this year. So we have a travel brand, we have a furniture brand, and then we are launching a kitchen brand and a, let's say, home accessory brand as well after that. So they're, as you can see, they're all very ubiquitous, but the problem is it's hard to find products in a ubiquitous market, right? And for those who don't know, ubiquitous just means it's everywhere. So it's hard. If you have the right skills and you do the right research, you can innovate a lot in those markets and you have a blue ocean product.
That's interesting. One of the things that you have is, so you mentioned that you have the product design studio, right? Product design, is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
We have a product design studio. You know, probably a lot of people asking, they're like, you know, a lot of people listening, they're like dropshippers or what is the product design studio? You know, we just have video editor that like rips out the best.
Yeah. So a product design studio is basically, we have a space where we have 3 product designers who work there full time. One is head of manufacturing and optimization, and he basically lives back and forth between where our studio is in China. And on top of that, we have 2 full-time designers who basically take ideas and products based on the research and data from the research team, plus having a deep understanding, because it all comes together. You can't design a great product without knowing the audience, the sales, the marketing, the brand story. So they take all that information, they see a gap in the market, we establish it as a team, and then they start going through the ideation process, and they have all the tooling, they have woodwork, metalwork, they have everything in the studio for them to start prototyping very, very quickly, very, very fast. And that's how we then have a whole system to take an idea, test everything about it. So we test not just the idea, but we test the audience, we test the narrative, and we test the price, because they're the three things we want to know before we launch. If we know that we've got the audience bang on, we know the narrative or the stories or the content that audience loves to hear and see and listen to and watch, and we know what price they want to pay for the product, for us, it just minimizes our risks so we can grow and scale fast.
How do you know those? Do you get those from competitors, like research, or like?
We do obviously the usual standard research and stuff, but then we test everything. So even after the research, we test, like, we have a very unique structure and formula of how we do it. It's kind of like you can't have one without the other. So we kind of do this all at the same time. So we test the product concept. We also use live data to test the audience. We use live data to test the narrative, live data to test the price. So we do what's called multivariate split testing. So we will multivariate split test the product. Once we kind of have an idea what the product is, will be, we like use some very good graphic design to like kind of test different variations of where the product can go. We then use Facebook ads and YouTube ads and things like this to test different audiences that might resonate with it. And then we give them different narratives. Like you can have a product, let's say you can have a sports product, okay, that could be resonating best with mothers or resonating best with men under 25 who do it. Or you could have a product that resonates with men over 50. So we want to know for that product which audience resonates best with it. Once we know what audience it resonates with best, we then move heavily into that. All our content will be geared for the audience that converts best for the product. But we do multivariate split testing, different landing pages, different offers, different everything to really nail the price, the audience, and the message.
Is there any specific price that you go after, like $100 plus, yeah, or specific profit margin that should be in it? Like, how do you approach
it? Yeah, we typically aim for products that are priced over $100. Between $100 and $500 is a sweet spot. We tend to find that, look, if you're going to launch a brand, right, because we're about building brands. If you're going to launch a real brand, you tend to have brands fall into three categories. You have affordable, you have premium, and you have luxury. So what we want to try and do, we want to make products that fall into the premium or higher end of premium luxury, but sold at a lower premium affordable price. That for us, we found is a sweet spot. So you tend to be able to do that between $100 and $500, depending on the price. We don't want to be affordable. If you're going to try and make an affordable product, you will just be competing with products on Amazon, and you'll never be able to put real, let's say, narrative value into the story of your product to really be able to sell it for a high price, because you need a good price in order to make the margin, right? Facebook ain't cheap, you know? So if you're trying to compete with Amazon prices, it ain't going to work. You must have a quality product with a quality narrative, and the narrative is everything. That's what differentiates us from the rest. And then that's how we started. And now obviously we've added lots of different layers to, as you can see, where we are now. So yeah, but that's where we originally started with this whole thing.
Do you buy some like proprietary, let's say you see some potential in specific markets, right? Let's say traveling, right? Mm-hmm. Do you buy like some proprietary data from some sources? Hey, you know, these are the trends and numbers in this market, or you just look from other sources?
No, we don't buy data. The best place we start, to be honest, is always with Amazon. We want to see what people on Amazon are saying. And then once we kind of know that, okay, there's a certain market that potentially is interesting, we will then move straight into ideation phase, along with continuing to do research, plus competitor. Like basically what we do, we have this thing in our business called an epic. And in this epic, it's basically one spreadsheet that has everything about our product. So we have competitor analysis, Amazon analysis, comment analysis, because the thing that matters to us is understanding that there's a real demand for a product. And we want to culminate all of our efforts into one place. So the narrative is right, the price is right, the product's right, everything is right. So we use real data and test it in real time. You can read all the reports in the world. You can go to HBR, Harvard Business Review, and get all the, let's say, case studies in the world. But nothing gives you more data than real clicks and real add to carts, real purchases. Nothing gives you more than that. So we always go through our strategy. It's a very unique one we've built over 2 years, and we've really got it nailed to a fine art. We're not perfect. We're still refining it. We still make mistakes, but we really have these things in place to minimize our risks so much. So obviously, yeah, to get the results we get.
So obviously what you have built is, big part is you, right? You're the brain behind the operation, but also your team, right? So how did you start building your team in the first place? How did you, like, what were your first employees? Like, how did you, you know, structure that relationship? Who, you know, do you hire your employees personally, or, you know, someone helps you? Like, how do you build an amazing team?
So first and foremost, in case any of my team are watching this, my team are everything. Without them, I have nothing. Literally, I am nothing without them. They are the be all and end all of my world. And I can't stress enough how people, if you can't bring great people into your team, you yourself will never be great. I used to think that the key to me being successful was me being a genius. And then one day it snapped that if I'm going to be really successful, I can't be a genius. I have to be a genius maker. So then I started realizing that I have to find other people and make them into geniuses. And then the whole world unlocked for me. So we've had people in our team now who are like three to 4 years in, and they will never leave us. They will never leave. They're going to be with us until we sell these brands at some point and have huge paydays. And they already know I'm going to have the biggest smile on my face writing them all massive checks. So we started very small. We first actually hired. So our first few hires were friends of mine who were doing the same thing as us. We were both failing. We were all failing on Amazon. And I was like, look, I've got a better way to do things. It wasn't working out for a few of them. I was like, look, join us. I've got this vision. And I've got a little bit of charisma. So they kind of believed in the vision, and then they joined. And then what we tend to do, what I'd advise people is, because people ask me this question a lot, number one piece of advice, always hire the manager first. Always. I've made this mistake so much. If you're gonna get successful, you need to have great people in your team. If you're gonna have great people in your team, you can't micromanage them to get to the next level. You have to let go of the reins. You have to let go. You have to let them take responsibility and make decisions. So the mistake I used to make a lot is I would always hire people and try and teach them a bunch of stuff. But at some point, when you let the reins go, they don't have the capability and the autonomy to scale. And even if they do, they can't manage others. So we always hire people who we see have management potential. So whatever part of the business we're hiring, we always look to hire the manager first. We train them aggressively and give them management skills. 99% of people in the world, including myself, are terrible at management. I'm a terrible manager. So you have to teach people these management skills. So that's the advice I'd give. But we always hire managers first, and then we went from there. You know, funny enough, a lot of people watching your videos, right, Alex, in your group, most of them are media buyers. They want to buy media. You know, with me, Alex, right, the media buying was the last thing I did. It's actually the last thing I did. I actually got all my ducks in a row first, and then I became a media buying expert. But until I got all my ducks in a row, I didn't buy media. I hired to do that, which now we've gotten to where we are. We will never hire someone else to do our media buying again. So yeah, it's kind of counterintuitive, but yeah, that's how we've done.
That's interesting. So how do you find that manager? Do you find someone who has experience, like project management experience, or like someone who who's in a big organization and build big teams? Like, how do you find those people?
Yeah, so it's quite a robust thing. There's no real one way to do it. We do like everybody else. We post on all the different forums and post on Facebook groups and things like that, but we use a very specific funnel. So we don't just post and then let people apply. We have a very set funnel. We have what we call a recruitment system. One thing you'll get to learn about me is my team give me a bit of a funny name. They call me the system master because we systemize everything in our business, right? So we have a recruitment system. So we get talent and get applicants from the same places most people do, but we have a very different funnel that we run them through. And then once we run them through the funnel, the best team members we have, and I never call them, one thing that's very true, I never call people employees. I do not employ them. They are part of our team and they are signed on to our mission. So I always call them team members. So the best team members that we always find, people who are ex-professionals who used to work in offices, because when they are able to come offline, to come from offline to online, and you give them that freedom and autonomy, they are experts. So for example, our creative director, she is Filipino, right? And she was working for Glaxo for like 10 years in a very senior manager. GlaxoSmithKline, one of like the big, I think it's Glaxo or Procter & Gamble, one of those behemoths. Yeah. So she worked for them for like 10 years. And it's so funny, when we hired her, she's a real, like, she is a stern person. Like, she doesn't fuck around, right? And when I tried to hire her, she tried to be like that with me. And then when she joined the team, she realized, oh shit, this guy is very different to anyone I've worked with before. She's a phenomenal. We love her to pieces. She's phenomenal. She brought such a level of experience to the role that I hardly manage her. I have a call with her once a week, and she does everything.
Was that your first hire?
She was our third. And she's been with us now like 3.5 years, and she will never leave. She will never leave.
And so that person, like that team member, is hiring your other team members now?
Yeah. She's now got a team of three under her. And growing rapidly. So we always look to hire the managers first. And I'll just tell people straight away, very rarely will you hire someone who is complete. You have to find the diamonds in the rough. Now, we do not hire for positions. We just hire great people and figure out how to put them in our business. Because if you try and hire for positions, you're going to try and fit square pegs in round holes, and you're going to lose a lot of phenomenal people. Just look for amazing people. When you find them, figure out how to mold them into this very new world of digital entrepreneurship that we're all trying to succeed in, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And so you mentioned, we had a little chat before starting. So you have your whole like product design studio, right? That's how you call it. And you have it in Romania, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you like, so do you face any like cultural differences, like, or you find it okay to collaborate with people in another country?
Yeah, so let's say like it is, right? I'm a black guy, right? And my wife, she's Romanian. And yeah, sometimes there are these things, but I'm not a snowflake like that. I'm a businessman, I don't care. And at the end of the day, the thing that I actually find most difficult is finding great people. You see, when you find great people, it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from. Great people, you know, it's like real recognizes real. So it's hard to find great people. And yeah, there's challenges, but come on, man, I'm not gonna cry about things. There's challenges for everybody. There's challenges for everyone in every walk of life. There are people who are, let's say, white, who have it way harder than me. I mean, come on, look at me. It's not like I'm struggling in life. So it's like, there's challenges wherever you go, whatever you do, deal with it, get over it, get on with life, because no one's gonna do you any favors. No one's gonna lift you up for doing nothing. You've gotta do it yourself, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. So yes, there's been challenges, but it only makes me stronger, and it only gives me even more resolve. I'm kind of like Cristiano Ronaldo. The more the crowd boo, the more I want to play well. So
did you have some like entrepreneurial upbringing, or you had some good role models?
Yeah, it's a great question. So my parents are originally from Nigeria, very traditional. And when it's funny, because when I was growing up, I didn't appreciate the education they were giving me. You know, very like, focus on education, learn, study, grow. My parents wanted me to be a doctor. And I was, I'm a big guy, right? I can barely get a jab in the hospital without feeling faint. So I'm not going to pretend to be some hard man. So it's kind of like they gave me a foundation of discipline that I didn't realize was valuable until I got older. But there's no real entrepreneurial background. I used to be, I basically have a degree in economics. I used to be a trader in the city of London for a few years. And then I left that to go to Spain and become a real estate investment, let's say, advisor, and not opening doors or showing people around houses. We were doing real estate investment sales over the phone. And I was sales and marketing director for a big company there. And then I moved to Dubai. Then I lost all my money, had nothing, started doing e-com like 4 years ago. And now the rest is history.
You have comprehensive background. Because the model that you have is, you know, even consider, you know, all of the information that's on the internet, right? Like, you know, you go on YouTube, like all these fucking cars, you know, these kids, you know, with like Lamborghinis, right? Like make money instantly and then fucking blow it up. What changed your perspective to be like more long-term oriented? For you to now think and build something unique in the marketplace, where do you think that trigger was, right? Because you changed multiple positions, you didn't have any direction. What was that?
Yeah, you know, it's a fantastic question. It's a great question. So for 99% of people, just like I used to say this when I was a sales manager, managing like loads of people in multiple offices. And it's kind of like most people who find themselves in a sales job, or most people who find themselves into e-commerce, they were doing something else in life. Something didn't go right, or they felt very discontented with their job. And then boom, they're reversing. They hit a sales job, or they hit, oh, what's this e-commerce thing I've been hearing about? And then everyone goes through I call it the evolution of e-com. When you first get into e-com, the first thing you try to do is start either drop shipping or selling on Amazon, right?
Correct.
And then maybe you dabble in a bit of print on demand for a little bit. And maybe you dabble into maybe trying to sell some courses for a little bit. And then you say, okay, I'm going to become an agency and start doing ads for other people. So there's like this whole evolution of e-commerce where you fail along all of those lines until you then look back. And I'm that, some people are different to this, but I'm that sort of person. I need to taste it all to then know, okay, I've tasted everything. I know I don't like this. I know I like this. So I did it all. I've done Amazon. I've done dropshipping. I've done POD. I've done it all, right? And every time I was doing one of those, and I was pretty good at each of them. I'm not saying I was bad, but I was never fantastic. Not because I didn't have the skill, because my heart wasn't in it. My heart wasn't in it. And my heart wasn't in it because I knew that I have very lofty goals like you, Alex, right? Mm-hmm. And we spoke before. My aim is to get to doing 100 million revenue a year in the next 3 to 4 years. And every single time I was doing one of those things, I knew I was never going to get to 100 million in revenue a year.
It's not fun, right? It's like there is no alignment.
Yeah, none at all. So my heart was never in it. And then when I realized to myself, I say this, and I used to say it a lot to dropshippers. If in your business, products are variables you're willing to change to make money, you do not have a business. You don't. Until products become a staple and you build your business around having great products, you will never, ever have a business or an asset worth selling. You never will. So if you're willing to chop and change products to find the next new winner, no disrespect to dropshippers. I love you guys. Some of my best friends are dropshippers and they're doing 10, 20 million a year. They're crushing it. I love these guys to pieces, right? We speak all the time. I can't wait. COVID has kept us away for so long. We can't wait to go to Greece and hang out. So I love these guys, right? I've got friends who are killing in dropshipping, but I tell them all the time, and they call me like the preacher. So I'm always preaching this shit, but it's true. If products are variables, you'll never grow a real business. So that really hit home to me. And I really realized that my product has to be the thing that defines who we are as a team, because that's what we live and die by. You can have the best ads in the world. You can have, you know, the best customer service, blah, blah, blah. But if you don't have a great product, you'll never sell anything. But then on the flip side as well, if you don't have all the other things, great customer service, great ads, you'll also never sell anything. That's why business is so hard. There's so many pit holes. It's like, I call it being a T-shaped person. If you are not a T-shaped person where you can be like an 8 or a 9 out of 10 across anything, and then whenever you have a fire or whenever you need to deal with a problem or whenever you need to explode an area, you have to be able to go deep, do what you need to do, blow it up, automate it, scale it, come back to the surface and carry on hunting like a shark. That's how kind of I run the business. You need to see where the problems are, go deep when you need to, expand it, automate it, systemize it, come back up. And that's basically my life. And in that process, when you go down, evaluate, solve, and automate, I'm phenomenal to manage what you've done. And you have to get them bought into the vision of what you have. And that, for me, is the proudest thing I have. Having a team of people who genuinely wake up every day and they're like, I love this guy. I love everything about what we're doing. And there's nothing, I promise you now, there's nothing anyone could offer anyone in my senior team that would make them leave. You could offer them, like, I reckon, 5-10 times the salary, they will not leave because they know the mission that we are on. And at the end of the day, when we hit that result, they're going to make 100 times more than you could ever offer them. So I'm very, very, I'm very proud of this. Very.
This is very different, man. You know, what the kind of the approach that you have, it's so different, you know, from everything that, you know, you see in this space, right? So how do you...
Coming from you, Alex, it means a lot. Coming from you, it means a lot because you kind of, you've seen a bit more behind the curtain of what we do. So it means a lot to hear that from you because it's hard. What we've done is hard. I sacrificed 2 years to build this. I sacrificed a lot to build this. So yeah, it's now paying off big time. So...
That's awesome. So you mentioned in our private group for students, you mentioned those things that you do inside of your team for incentivizing them. So can you elaborate on those?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I know what you're referring to. So I didn't think it was valuable, but people tend to really think it's valuable. So I'll kind of go through it. So the number one thing you should do when building a great team is these people live very different lives to you. And I think that gets lost a lot with people in e-commerce. Everyone who is trying to do ads or dropship or do an Amazon, they're very much in their own bubble. They're very myopic in what they want. And they don't realize that unless the people you hire have the same myopia in the same goals, you're always going to be fragmented and you'll never grow. It's really hard to get people from the Philippines, people from the UK, people from America, people from Eastern Europe to wake up every day and think my life's work is building these brands with this team that I am fortunate to join, and I love working with the people that I work with. To foster that harmony in a team is so difficult, and it took us a long time to figure out the key to doing it. So the first thing is, everything that you do, if you're going to get to serious levels of money, like serious levels of wealth, you need to know that this is what's going to make you or break you. So if you're going to get to that level, the first thing you have to do is realize, well, I'm going to give some practical, simple things, right? Yeah. So number one, make a fucking company manual. If you have a team of people and you don't have a company manual, you are delusional. Like, you're never going to, if you don't even have the basics of, you hire someone new, if you want to know who we are, here's our manual, here's everyone in the business, these are the roles, this is what we do, this is our mission. If you don't even have that somewhere that someone can see, I promise you that you and your team are going to be like this all over the place, and you're not maximizing your potential, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, another thing I would really advise people to, just what I've seen as a determinant of if someone's going to be really successful, you have to be great at spreadsheets. I know it's boring, I know it sounds silly, but if you are not great at spreadsheets throughout your business, if like, you can pretty much know someone's level of success by how many spreadsheets they have in their business. If you go on their Google Drive and they have no spreadsheets, I promise you that person is not successful. If they have a lot of spreadsheets, the high chance is that they're organizing their data in a very structured way, which at least gives them a chance to be successful.
For sure, man. 100%. We have students, we have, you know, the calls with them. It's like, okay, what are the numbers? And like, they pull up the spreadsheet. The guy does like, you know, $50 million. Like, here's the ad spend here, you know, all of the metrics, the profit margin, here's all of the expenses. And I remember, man, like, I mean, I learned so much from that kid. It was like 2016 or something, you know, I was like fresh. And I was doing freelancing, you know, like working with 2015 or 2000. And so I was working with clients. And I worked for a guy, like he was young, like he was like 16 or 17 years old, and he just started to do drop shipping. And that guy had like the P&L, you know, the P&L sheet. I was like, geez, like that's so like, and he would have all of his like overhead. He would have like what he paid me, you know, as an overhead. He had all of his like, you know, the expenses and everything. So he knew exactly his profit like on a daily basis. British kid. I mean, he's very successful. He sold that business, I believe, and now he runs like another like huge business with, he started it. But definitely, you know, that type of thinking that everything is like measured, you put everything in and everything is accountable.
Yeah, if you can't measure it, you can't grow it. It's just simple. If it's not being measured, it can't, you can't hit a target you're not aiming for. So if you're not even aiming at a target, you're done for in the beginning. So that's another thing that's key. Another thing that's really, really key for us, it's the little things. So you'd be surprised, right? If you have a team of people, anybody, when I say a team, even having one employee, if you are not having a regular weekly call with everybody in your company in one place, you're making a big mistake. Like, you'll be surprised how many people don't even have calls on a secular basis with the people in their team. They just kind of let them drift. If you're not having a call every week, there's a problem. And the more you are disorganized, the more calls you should have. So if you're starting from scratch, you're like, shit, this resonates, I need to start having meetings. The next 1 or 2 weeks, you should have a meeting every day. And then as things start becoming more organized, you filter out to 3 times a week, then 2 times a week, and then once a week. And then now we have a meeting once a week. So having regular meetings, I know it's really rudimental things I'm saying, but trust me, it's the key to success. Another thing, focus your team on strategy. Even your customer service team, this is a big thing for me, realizing that so we're great at building systems. It's great to systemize and get people who are great at optimizing systems and things. But the thing that really unlocked for us is having everyone having a strategic focus. Everyone in your business must think strategy. For their pocket of the world they live in your business, they must always be thinking strategy. That's why it's important to always hire the manager first. Another thing that the last thing I would say that we do that fosters this growth and finding great people is, look, you really have to take a personal interest with at least the senior management in your team. Like, with our senior manager in our team, we know their husbands and wives' names, we know their birthdays, we know their kids' names, we know so much about them that it transcends just employee-employer relationship. We truly care about their lives, and life is tough, man. Life happens when you're making plans. So people get ill and it's sad and it's hard, you know, and people have kids people have families, new people, and it's great to share that joy with them. So you really have to realize that you can't just live in your own bubble of I want to make money. You have to really understand that there are people on the other end of Slack with their own lives and their own things and their own missions and their own personal things. And you have to really get to know them and love them, because if you don't, you'll never grow to a place where you're maximizing your potential. Because yeah, that's not really take a personal interest in the people who really move the needle in your team, because we love our team deeply and we know them on a very personal level and they know us. So that's another big thing I would say.
That's awesome. And so you mentioned that you're not like the perfect manager, right? Yourself. I mean, me neither. So how do you like, do you work on improving yourself, your skills as a manager? Do you get like, do you train yourself to be like more patient with people, to explain things, or you find a person on your team who complements that and just kind of does
it? Alex, man, I tried. I tried. I genuinely tried for years, and because I was a manager, I was sales and marketing manager for a property. But I tried, man. I'm. Do you know what it was, right? So I'll go back to my Spain days. So I was managing like a team of 40 salespeople across like 3 offices, and in the Spain office, I was very polarizing. Like for lack of a better word, I was very Trumpesque, right? The sales team, I had like a sales team of like, let's say there's like 20 people in an office, 10 of them would love me. And they would march to war with me. They will go to war with me. It doesn't matter what we're fighting. Just tell me where we're going, Sam. I'll sharpen my blades. I'm there. The other half hated me. So I was very much like this. So, and for a manager, that's terrible. The number one thing a manager needs is diplomacy. And I have very, very little. So very much like nominal CEO, right? As a CEO, as a leader, I am great. As a manager, I'm terrible. So I try to get better, and I read I listen to a lot of audiobooks. Every day I at least listen to like 1 or 2 hours of audiobooks when I'm working out and things like this. But when you get to a certain age, and I'm 36, you just like, I'm never going to be a professional football player. I love football. I wish I could be like Cristiano Ronaldo, but I look in the mirror, I see the gut, I look at my knee, one is busted. I'm never going to be banging in 30 goals in the Premier League, right? So I have to draw a line in the sand at what I can and can't do. And being a great manager is one of those things. So I'm a great CEO, I'm a great leader, but yes, I hire phenomenal managers. That's why I always say hire. You see, it comes full circle. Hire the manager first, because I'm a terrible manager. But now I have people in my team who truly understand who I am and how I work. And they love me, I love them. I'm very brash, I'm very to the point. Like we're very, like this with each other, oh, but man, it works.
Same here.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
It works, you know, they know. If I'm pissed off, or don't do this and this annoys me, they quieten down. But then don't get it twisted. They know me well enough now to say, if I'm making a mistake, no, Sam, hey, Sam, red flag, you're being a dick, this ain't gonna work, it can't work. And I push a lot, and 90% of the time, they don't push back, right? Mm-hmm. Because they trust in my vision as a leader. But
yeah.
When they push back, okay, I'll shut up now, because I trust them to know that if they're pushing back, I trust them enough to know that they're pushing back for a very good reason. And I now need to shut the fuck up, listen to what they want to do, and just trust that they're going to do it. So,
wow, man, such a good insight. What's your typical, like, you hire locally in Romania, or you still like, your market is like still worldwide?
It's still worldwide. I mean, here in Romania, we only have the design studio. We don't really have any more people other than the design studio here. So we have like in the studio, like we travel a lot between the UK, Romania, the USA and Asia. And we're very fortunate to have this sort of life. Obviously before the bullshit, we all know what we're talking about. So before all this shit happened, we're very fortunate. So it's kind of like, we only have the design studio here. And we have a couple of people who also come to the office to do some little things. But apart from that, the rest of our team is global. And as we continue to grow, we'll continue to grow global, because there's talent all over the world if you choose to look. Some people say it's hard to deal with the Chinese because of this. It's bullshit. People are people. There are assholes who are English and American. There are assholes who are Chinese. There are great people who are Chinese, and there are great people who are English and American. It's about finding people. People are what matter. It doesn't matter where you're from. So yeah, we have a global team. As we continue to grow, we kind of want to foster Like, because one thing that you said a lot that resonated with me is it's great to work remote, but if you're going to get to these sorts of numbers like that we're talking about, you need to have an office. And I must admit, I watched your video saying this like 2 years ago. I remember it was like 2018. I was like, what's this Fedotov idiot talking about, man? Like, Jesus, he has all this money. Like, what's he talking about? Like, I can hire people from the Philippines. Like, I was still thinking in a very small mindset. But since we opened the design studio here, like a year and a bit ago, we're looking to hire more and more people locally, just because that culture that you build of, do you know what it is? It's not about having them in the same place for the sake of working in an office, because people, we don't micromanage. People can come and go as they please. If you want to come, you can come. If you don't want to come, we don't micromanage. But one thing that we noticed that works really well is when they're local, and I've been forced to be local because of COVID, you get to know people more. You get to love them more. You get to see their families more. You go to their houses. You go to their parties. You get invited to their weddings. And that connection, you can't buy it. So, yes, we have people in the Philippines that we love. There's people we love in the Philippines. There's people we love from India. There's people we love from the US. But there's a lot to be said for the people who are locally with you to really have a deeper impact in who they are, what their goals are. So yeah, we're actually becoming more and more office based, but we're always going to do what's best for the business. But we do have a bit of a tendency now to try and hire a bit more locally.
So with this, so you have two products that are currently running, and you have some new products that are basically being like introduced.
Yeah.
So how do you test these products like beforehand, like before you launch them, before you invest like more resources into developing them, or like how do you typically do that?
Yeah. So the first thing we do is we start with the research. And then once we kind of find a gap, we give it to the product design team, and we kind of have a company call, and it's like, hey guys, we're looking to kind of do this in this niche. And everyone just talks openly with ideas, and that's how we start building the epic. And then once we kind of have, it's not a science, it's an art. So once you kind of have some idea of where you want to go, it then goes over to the product designers. And I'm very, very lucky, that I have excellent product designers, and one guy in particular is just a star he was a diamond in the rough, and I loved what he was doing so much. I gave him equity in the business, a good chunk as well, even on a salary, on a bonus, on everything. I still gave him equity in the business, because when you're that talented, you know, not having ownership of what you are making, I think there's something wrong there. So I gave him a good chunk of equity in the business, and now he believes so deeply in our mission, and that's how we do it. So it's hard, but there's no real science to it. It's kind of an evolving thing. We do research. It goes to the product design team. Ideation starts. Maybe we go here. Maybe we go here. Maybe we go here. We have a call. So guys, I've done this drawing. I kind of think the product can be like this. It can be like this. We see some design sketches. Everyone is like, on this one. Maybe on this one. This one. And then, okay, good feedback. He goes back. Does a bit more, tweaks a bit more. Oh, okay, it looks like we've got two angles now. Okay, great. What I'm gonna do, I'm gonna prototype them both. I wanna feel how it looks, feel it in the hand, see how it looks, what's the size. Prototypes come, big call happens, shows us everything on the camera. The people in the office obviously are there, we play around with it, we give feedback. Once it's like, okay, this one seems like the direction to go. Okay, great. Graphics team, make mock-ups of all of this on graphics, right? Let's start running some ads. Let's start seeing if people click. Let's start making some landing pages. Let's start testing, you know, maybe the audience A or B or C resonate with this. We start spending a few hundred bucks. Maybe you spend $300-$400. Oh, okay. The click-through rate from the image B for audience D is working really well. Okay, let's move more into there. Now let's do a brand avatar, a customer avatar. Where are they from? What do they like? What other pages? We go into Facebook Insights. What other pages they like? Okay, great. Looks like this is interesting. The next phase of the prototype comes along. Okay, we have a little model now. Let's make a 30-second video. Very amateur, very small. Make a little video. Video editing team, add a bit of text on top, text overlay. Get some, let's say, generic footage. Add it all together. Make a little story. Run some more ads. Upgrade the landing page a little bit more. Go deeper into the audience. Let's see the click-through rates. Oh, click-through rates are even better now. Conversion rate on the page is even better now. Let's test the price. So now we want to put some prices on there through ClickFunnels. How many people add to cart for $100? How many people add to cart at $120? How many add to cart $150? Oh, because many people are surprised. You think the lowest price always gives you the most money. No, it doesn't. Very rarely does the lowest price make you the most profit. So we test 100, we test 120, we test 150. Ding, ding, ding. 120 seems to be the winning number. Okay, now let's put a survey in the end. So once they click add to cart, they click, oh, sorry, people, we've sold out, but we're coming to market with this, this, and this. Sign up for a 20% discount. They sign up, boom, takes them to a survey. So, hey, Mr. Whatever or Mrs. Whatever, you sign up for this. We've got a little secret to tell you, but before we tell you the secret, spend 2 minutes filling out this survey. Where are you from? What's your name? What's your email? Why do you like this product? We're going to do this. We're going to do this. The features have this, this, and this. What feature do you like best? Okay, the message that we want to put on this is this and this. What message resonates with you more? What image do you like more? So we ask like really simple rudimentary questions to really start understanding the customer more. And then when they finish the survey, it redirects them to, and we give them the big reveal. And people actually love it. It's like, big reveal, hey, you've been part of the test. You have been a guinea pig. And we make the landing page really fun and engaging. You've been a guinea pig. We're sorry to upset you, but you're a guinea pig. We've been using you, you know, and now we've got the answer from you. We don't need you anymore. Go away. No, we're only joking. What we actually want to do is we want to give you a great discount when we launch the product. We're still developing it. You're on our email list now. Join the group. Join the conversation. We can't wait to bring this product to you. And when you actually give people the ability to actually be part of the development process of the product, this is why we convert so well. We convert through the nose because what they say in those surveys gets implemented into the product. And when they join the group, we often show the development phase from ideation to finish, and people absolutely love it. And they are the biggest brand advocates for what we do.
Wow, man, this is so good. I recommend to everyone who was listening just to like re-listen this a few times, because this is just a way to disrupt markets. You know, you can go to pretty much any market and find the product that would improve on something that's already like existing in that market. Sam, what would be like your estimate in terms of, let's say, okay, dropshipper. Let's say I'm dropshipper. Let's say dropshipper, done good money with dropshipping, right? Wants to move to, you know, creating something like more sustainable, more long-term.
Mm-hmm.
So what amount of money would you say would be sufficient for developing a product like this with unique product design? Obviously, you know, just a ballpark number.
For someone like you, right? I would say like 20-30K would be able to build you a product design studio in your home country and find great people to be part of the team and really get them on. So it's not just about hiring them, it's about getting them motivated for the product. But I'll give you a little bit of insight. So when I was starting all of this, obviously I did Amazon, I did dropshipping. And this is the funny thing. People in Amazon are really good at just tweaking a little bit of the product and selling it to Amazon. But Amazon people are terrible at Facebook ads. And then you have people who are great at Facebook ads doing dropshipping, and they're terrible at tweaking the product a little bit. They get scared of, I've got to communicate with China and talk to this. Like, this is bullshit. I just want to sell what's on AliExpress. It's like, no. There are ways to do things, right? So this is how I start.
I'll put my logo on it.
Yeah. It's strange because the Amazon guys are good at tweaking products and the dropshippers are good at doing ads. Amazon guys are allergic to ads. Dropshipping guys are allergic to tweaking products. So what I would advise all the dropshippers to go and watch an Amazon course as to how they advise you. This is like really like product development 101, but this is where I started. Go watch an Amazon course. Listen to what they say about how to communicate with suppliers to adjust and edit a product just a little bit to give you a little bit of uniqueness. So that's where we started. And we did really well. Like the thing is, right, you don't have to, so products come in, I won't go into that because this is a much longer discussion to have, but basically, right, if you can understand that there's two parts to selling a product, selling to being successful in e-com, there's the product and there's marketing. At the beginning, you can play around with adjusting the product just a little bit, but you have to be really on point with marketing, right? And have great narratives to sell, like you have great marketing, right, to sell generic products. So you can go the other way where you can make a really great product, not necessarily have the best marketing and still get great results. But when you can do both, it's another level, right? But from the beginning, I would say for people to get started in understanding, like not everyone has the money like me and you, Alex, to go and build a design studio and blah, blah. So people who don't have that, go watch some Amazon courses as to how they advise you to tweak a product. And just play around with tweaking a product a little bit. And you don't necessarily even have to sell the product. just tweak it through the manufacturer, okay? Most manufacturers in China with no product that costs 10 to 20 bucks, so I have an MOQ of like 100, 200 units. Buy it. Like, if you want to invest in this, go to the whole thing. If you could just put a couple grand in buying some units. If it doesn't sell, so what? You lost a couple grand, so what? Get it made. And then try and make content for that specific product with the tweak and see if it resonates. Just as really a game to play, just to have fun doing it, because that's how we started. And obviously that's where we initially did things. Now we have a full-on product design studio. But I'm not going to advise people who don't have the money or the resources or the skill to go and do that off the bat, right? So the baby step is, all you dropshippers, listen to this call of action. Go watch some Amazon courses. Learn how these Amazon courses advise you to tweak and edit products and communicate to suppliers in AliExpress and Alibaba. Once you go through that game a little bit and you enjoy it, try and make some landing pages, ClickFunnels, Shopify, whatever. Have fun selling it. Don't try and make money. No one's trying to make money, you know, selling 200-300 units of product, right? Mm-hmm. Just have fun with it. And then once you get the taste for it and you're like, shit, this can be done, okay. Then maybe me and Alex can have another call in a more deep dive to explain to you in much more detail how you go from there to eventually having a product design studio with amazing designers who can really find you pockets in a market where you can build something evergreen that is a blue ocean product for you to scale for years to come. And as you know, Alex, we have these sorts of products. So there is a way to do it. I can't really articulate it here because we'd need like an hour to go through it, but there is a way.
We'll definitely set it up, man. We'll definitely set it up. I think it will be so beneficial, you know. And that's, you know, basically it was our business, you know, so we wanted to sell it. And the multiple that we were offered, like, you know, was like fucking laughing. And, you know, because of the products, you know, products are not unique, like not extremely, you know, differentiated. So for the last like 2 months, we've been working on that, but not to the degree that you have been, you know, because the products that you have, they're like fully unique, right? So that is a direction that, you know, we want to go with our business, having that like blue ocean, right? Yeah. When I seen your product, I said, fuck, this will just, you know, people have never seen something like this before.
Mm-hmm. But you have to understand, we didn't start there. Like 3 years ago, our first ever product, like I'll give you an example, right? So one of our products in that 2 year learning phase was a very generic product, very generic. Like I'm not going to say what it is. I'm going to give like a simple example. So let's say it was a sneaker. Instead of having, it was a sneaker, let's say that we put a different sole on it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's very generic, but because we got so good at marketing, it's kind of like our skills were forged in the fire. Because we were selling generic products that were tweaked a little bit, we had to have really good marketing to sell them. Yes. So we got so really good at doing
that. That's on our side. We're very good at selling it, right? And so we managed, you know, to do eight figures a year selling like generic products, right? But at the end of the day, it's like...
But this is where we realized the gap. So we realized, shit, we're really good at... If we can sell this, like we looked at it, it's like my friend, like I've got a really good friend here. His name is Daniel. I'm sure he's going to watch this. He knows who he is. So I've got a really good friend here, right? And he's just like, we launched the product, and in the first like 3-4 months, we did like about 800K. Uh-huh. And I was pissed. I was like, oh man, I wanted to make more. We should have made more. And it happened right at the start of COVID. Like people were thinking the estimates on the TV is like, there's going to be 30 million dead globally and all this. So everybody was just like, oh my God, our product was tanking. And we only ended up making like 700-800K. And I remember I was on a call with him and I was basically crying about it. Like, oh man, this is shit. And this product did shit and this, that, and the other. And he was like, man, you didn't do anything. You contacted a supplier. You tweaked one tiny thing on it. You made a funny video. You made a meme and you made 800K. Stop being a fucking bitch. And I was like, oh shit, you know what? It's actually true. You know what we paid for the prototyping of that product? No joke, $800. And it ended up making us 800,000. So it's kind of like, yeah. So that was when we were doing, like, that was one of that was our last product before we took the step up. And obviously now we've taken the step up with our, like, yeah, it took me 2 years. And then even when you start designing products, it will take like a year, like 6 months to a year before you have something ready that's blue ocean. But in that phase of hiring the design team and getting to the blue ocean stage, we still was doing our, let's say, we call them quick win products. You can launch them, tweak a bit, make a couple, you can, let's say, make a mil or two if you're lucky, but we were pumping out volume. Yeah. So that's why we were doing like 4 or 5 million a year. But now obviously we've gone from here to the whole completely next level, like you've seen. So with our product. So that was our last quick win product. And he was like, dude, stop fucking moaning. What the fuck did you do? And and now I look back and I laugh. It's like, fuck, we did nothing. We make so much money. So it just shows our marketing was so good. But then now we've introduced products that are next level with our next level ability to do marketing. Well, you've seen the result and you see the trajectory that we're on. So yeah, I'm just so fortunate. I've got such a great team. I really am.
That's awesome, man. So are there any specific resources specifically like on product design that you found very useful or?
Yes, I would say a great book. Fucking hell, I should get some commission. I'm sure they're going to get some crazy sales from e-commerce people for the next few years watching. If Fedotov's in the video, people are going to be sharing it. They're going to be definitely sending this on Amazon. I can't remember the name, but when you post a video, I'll put it in the comments. Called Out the Box, and it's about product design. It's by some Jewish guys, and it's like a Jewish guy and an American guy. Try and find it if you can. It's called Thinking Outside the Box. It could be Thinking Outside the Box or Thinking Inside the Box, one of the two. I'm going to search for it as well. Because if people can read this book, it really gives you an understanding that... I'll give you an example from the book. Hold on. It's a blue cover.
Jacob Goldenberg?
Yeah, that's the one. Jacob Goldenberg, yeah. So it's called Thinking Inside the Box. And what this shows you is... I'll give you an example from the book. The iPod, right? iPod is probably the most successful products the world has ever seen. And the iPod led to the iPhone, right? That was a prerequisite to the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Do you know one of the biggest selling versions of the iPod was? Do you know what it was? It was the iPod Shuffle. The iPod Shuffle.
And the little one, the
tiny one, yeah. So everyone loved the iPod because it gave you 1,000, remember the tagline from Apple, 1,000 songs in your pocket, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
And as they started to expand the product line, they were like, how do we become better? How do we sell more? Typical Apple. And thinking inside the box was one of the quintessential paradigms that made the iPhone Shuffle one of the best selling products. Because you'll be surprised. You know how you can actually make shit tons of money by actually removing features from a product? I know, it sounds like crazy. I do the research, the iPod Shuffle was one of the best-selling iPods, one of the best-selling products in the history at the time. And it took the iPod, which had remember they had the really innovative wheel and the interface was very rudimental, but the innovative wheel and the touch wheel was what actually sold it. And then what they did was like, let's remove the wheel, let's remove the screen, let's remove everything from it and just leave a tiny little thing that doesn't let you change, doesn't let you pick anything. You upload songs on it, and when you press change, it randomizes it for you. People bought it through the nose. You would think that when you did the market research, the iPod, if you're gonna evolve it to the next level, maybe you wanna have a more sexier screen, maybe you wanna have a better interface, all of this stuff, and all their competitors, Sony, all the other big brands, were trying to copy the iPod by giving it more features.
Yeah.
And Apple went the other way and released the Shuffle, where they went backwards. They released less features and it ended up being one of their best selling products ever at the time. So it just goes to show, and that's what this book, Thinking Inside the Box, shows you. If you're going to really become a phenomenal product designer and an entrepreneur to make evergreen stuff, sometimes the most counterintuitive things are the things that resonate most with an audience. You would never have guessed after seeing the iPod how as revolutionary as it was, that making an even simpler product, taking all the features away from the iPod and just giving them a tiny little square that you can't control anything on, would end up being one of their most famous best-selling products. So read that book, it will show you why. And once you start understanding these paradigms to product dev, your eyes will truly be open.
That's awesome, man. Thank you. What is where people can find you? How people can connect with you?
Nowhere, man. I'm kind of man. I'm not really that kind of guy.
It's like, hello.
I'm not really that kind of guy, but we kind of spoke before this call, Alex, and we're going to maybe potentially do a little something that people might find valuable. So yeah. I would say when we have that call, then hopefully I'll get my personal profile set up. But guys, honestly, out there watching this, I've got nothing to promote. I've got nothing like that. I'm a very different breed, and I managed to find Alex and people in his team, and they're also a very different breed. Otherwise, I wouldn't do this shit. I don't suffer fools gladly. I don't. at all. But when I find people who are real, I kind of think that real recognizes real. And obviously, Alex is the real deal. Anyone who knows him knows that. So I love what you're doing and what your team are doing. And yeah, I think where to find me? Let's put a pin in it. Let's turn me into a clubhouse. Before you get access, you need to get a referral. So let's do that for now. Let's do that for now. For sure, me and Fedotov will be on another call soon. Yeah. We'll have something that might be interesting for everybody. But for now, you know, all I can say is, if you spent time watching me talk shit for however long, thank you very much. And let's, for sure, I'll be back with you at some point to actually give you some.
Let's get back to our businesses and everyone who watched. Thank you so much for watching. Man, I mean, so many great insights. And what you have done is amazing.
Thank you.
You know, it's very, very different from almost everything, you know, that, I mean, I know some entrepreneurs that do, but like developing this stuff, you know, from scratch and building the team from scratch and like within like 2 years, that's quite like phenomenal achievement. So I know it's just a starting point for you. I mean, the potential that's there using these products and other products that you launch is tremendous. So I'm looking forward to seeing hit, you know, the first 100 and have a massive acquisition, man. And we'll connect for another call and we'll share, you know, something that people might find valuable as well.
Thank you, man. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate it, Alex. Really.
Cool. Thank you, Sam. And thank you everyone for watching and have a good day. Thank you.